This Steve Jones Show podcast is now loading. The Steve Jones Show podcast is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and NIL Game Changers.
Okay.
Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, and Brewers Outlet. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us today. And this big week for Penn State football as the Nittany Lions get ready to take on U.S. This half hour of the show being brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com, auto, home, life, business, boat, motorcycle, RV. They do a great job of making sure that you are fully insured while saving you money. So important. Always looking forward to saving you money. And customer service means everything to them. At Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury, go to purdyinsurance.com. Always great to be joined by the brilliant and insightful Mark Wogenrich, whom I have such great respect for. My friend, welcome back to the show. It's great to have you with us.
As always, appreciate being here. Thanks, Steve.
All right. Mark, Saturday, I referred to it on the broadcast at the end with Jack, as I felt like it was a workmanlike performance. How would you describe it?
Good word. I don't think it was... A lot of these times when I'm writing, maybe I'll try to think of, like, scores in terms of functionality. Like, in my mind, I call them functional scores. To me, this was the functional score of 27-3. That was a late drive that UCLA had, scored in the last minute, largely against second-team defense. It matters on the board, but if you're looking at just good on good, I felt like 27-3 was probably a fairly representative score of, you know, a result of what happened that day. And maybe it didn't feel as though that score was, you know, represented that kind of dominance. And they didn't have it to an extent, but there was one. It was just another one of those games. It didn't feel like it was in doubt. I didn't feel like in any of these five games so far, close as they may be, to the point where, you know, against Bowling Green, they still have to recover an onside kick, but the result didn't appear in doubt. That it was just a degree of the result. And part of me thinks that that's just what Penn State kind of is facing this season, that it's just they're kind of being graded on degrees.
But, I mean, let's face it, because of the playoff, that's probably how they're, you know, yeah, how everybody's being evaluated at this point. Because one thing we don't know is, we don't know what the committee thinks, because they haven't done this before.
Right, exactly. And it goes to an interesting point that James Franklin brought up. I found it interesting, he mentioned it after Saturday's game, and then mentioned it again today, that Penn State is the only team over the last 4 years. They were the only team over the last 4 years to start a season 4-0. And now they're the only team over the last 4 years to start a season 5-0. And that, there's a lot of subtext to that, and you get into, like, scheduling and everything like that. But that one, that means that for 4 years now, they're putting themselves in position, that every year they're getting themselves into position to be competitive. This season, they don't have to be, it's strange to call it as competitive, but they have a wider berth this season that, as you said, you know, with 12 teams and with the playoff committee that you really just haven't any idea what they're thinking as of now, and you won't for still a couple of weeks, it's important to put yourself in a 5-0 position and to be there, but I don't think you have to be, you just don't have to be superhuman, as maybe you did in past years, and that style meant as much. It certainly means something, but it doesn't, not going to mean as much. We don't know what they were thinking. You know, I mean, the best example, we don't know what they're thinking of Alabama right now.
Right.
leading Georgia 28-0, hanging on, and then losing at Vanderbilt. We have no idea what their perception of Alabama is. And it's probably a good thing that we really don't know and won't know for a couple of weeks until these perceptions gather more data.
No question. And I think when you look at Saturday, Vanderbilt beats Alabama. Alabama never led, first time in 5 years. Washington beat Michigan. Minnesota beat USC. Arkansas beat Tennessee. It's hard to win.
Yeah.
You got games like that, it's hard to win.
And it's even harder. It's even harder to win now, at least early. It's showing. It's harder to win when you have to go somewhere and cross a couple of time zones, whether the weather of travel affects you or not. At least early in some of these games, it has mattered. I mean, I think I have right now, it's like the team that's done the traveling in these Big Ten games, it's either crossed a couple of time zones or in either direction. I think they're like, 1-9, 1-8 or 1-9, something like that. The only team that's won crossing a couple of time zones is Indiana at UCLA.
Right.
So there is something there that, one, it's just hard to win, and two, it's hard to win when you're playing, when you've got to divert, when you've got to adjust your schedule so much and make a lot, make scheduling concessions. So that, to me, is one of the unique factors in play with Penn State going to USC. That we think in terms of, the only time we travel like that is we think in terms of that being a bowl game. And there's a lot more built into it. And now it's, how do they handle the fact that they're only going for 3 days instead of, 5 or 6?
Through the opening 5 games, is there any area that's been a little better than you thought it might be? And is there an area where they're not quite as good as you thought they might be?
I probably would go with conventional wisdom. Everybody, that they're better at wide receiver than I thought they would be. I thought there would be more of a hierarchy with Trey Wallace as being a defined absolute number one, and then complementary receivers around him. And that may still turn out to be the case over the course of 12 games and beyond. But the fact that you've got 4 players, 3 receivers and Tyler Warren with 100-yard receiving games, and the fact that that Liam Clifford can have like the third down production that he's had this year, and specifically the third down production he had against UCLA. I see them being able at that position with those 4 guys. It just seems like they got a nice 4-player rotation there with Wallace, Liam Clifford, Julian Fleming, and Omari Evans. That at some point, and you don't know when, you don't necessarily know when it's coming, at some point one of those guys can kind of go off and have a big game. That's been a real factor. That's been a real positive for me. And special teams, it's part of it is also a circumstance with having to play, Caden Saunders for a few weeks in a limited status as punt return. So he kind of gave up that element in order to catch the pass or in order to catch punts and just make sure you have possession. But there have just been a little bit of shakiness on special teams. Like Riley Thompson didn't have his best game punting the ball. Gabe Nwosu's kicked a couple out of bounds. And then the changes at kicker. I just think I always say, you don't notice special teams until you notice them. You don't notice kickers until you notice them. Those are the grace notes that will show up in bigger games.
You mentioned the receivers. What I found interesting is Penn State has had 4 100-yard receiving games from 4 different players.
Right, exactly. That's what I was trying to get at. More words than you did. That's been very. Like I expected it from Tyler Warren. It's hard. Sometimes it's just hard for tight ends to get 100-yard receiving games because you don't expect them with as much of the yards that could catch as a receiver, and you're not going to throw the 50-yarder to those guys. But he's just so effective and such a weapon in so many ways. But you don't necessarily expect, unless it's late receiving yards, in, you know, third quarter, you know, late third quarter or fourth quarter, when you're kind of, when you might be piling up yardage, or if you're giving chase, and they haven't had to do that yet. But you don't expect that many receivers to have like that kind of game unless you're throwing 45 times a game. That's the other thing, that Drew's just not, in this offense, he hasn't been a 45 pass guy a game. I mean, he's averaging in the 20s. I don't have the number in front of me, but he's just not throwing a ton of passes. So to have three different guys with 100-yard games, I think speaks to the explosivity, one, of their passing offense, and two, like I said, the fact that each of those guys brings just something a little bit unique that in a certain situation can be explosive at just the right time.
Which then brings us to the defense. And when I look at, you want to be good up the middle. Right? And you look at Zane Durant Thomas, you look at Kobe King, you look at Jalen Reed. Quarterbacks you and I both know, Mark, and all the quarterbacks you and I have talked to over the years, they don't like pressure in their face.
Right.
What has Durant meant in that regard? And then what's been the domino effect of Durant on what he's doing to help the defensive ends?
I remember talking to Zane like that about last year, and him just him saying that his size, I mean, he's gotten bigger, but initially he wasn't that big a guy, but he never thought that that was an issue because he's explosive. And he's almost got like a defensive end kind of step coming out of a three-point stance. And he's real. I think he's really shown that this year. And just to have him to be able to consistently get through and at least get a hand up, get an arm up, make a quarterback move, get him out, or at least, force them to be rolling quarterbacks so then he's only using half the field. When you do that, and then you're lining Abdul Carter up behind him situationally, which just adds another element to that up the middle, that up the middle scene that they've got going on. Then with Kobe, I think Kobe King's having a terrific year so far. He's been very good, very sure. And Jalen, even without KJ Winston, if you had Reed, Wheatley, and still had those three guys, Reed, Wheatley, and Winston back there, you'd have an all-star class of the baseball, pitcher, shortstop, center fielder. It would be a masterclass with that group. And but even without Winston, they've still been able to get Jalen Reed in some of those blitz packages going. He had a couple. He had a big one at the goal line against UCLA. And I've just been really impressed specifically with those two guys, with King and Durant, as far as how they can then manifest plays for Tony Rojas and deny Dennis Sutton. And like I said, Reed being able to come off and blitz, stuff like that. And the corners will feed off that too, that they can jump around. I think Zane Durant has been probably about as core player as they've had defensively so far, and be able to have ripple effects that just, improves conditions for everybody else.
I'm going to guess that when they put all this together and USC and UCLA said, hey, is there an avenue for us to get in? And Fox then said, we'll make a call, and found out it was a possibility. And then a year later, Oregon and Washington got it. Something tells me this is what the Big Ten had in mind Saturday, a doubleheader of Penn State, USC, followed by Ohio State, Oregon. I think, Mark, this is probably what they were hoping for.
Yeah, I mean, that's the centrifuge of that. Absolutely. This is the centrifuge of that, of the whole expansion. And I think one of the really interesting ripple effects of that expansion then comes into play with a team like Indiana. Because,
yes,
as you said, the networks, the three meteorite partners want Penn State, USC. They want Oregon, Ohio State. They want Michigan, USC. They want Washington, Ohio State. They want the brand game. Are they okay then with having, again, not disrespecting Indiana, but they okay with having a team like Indiana or Rutgers play the noon Big Ten Network game or the FS1 game, and maybe won't place them into higher profile matchups? some of the teams that Rutgers doesn't play, some of the teams Indiana doesn't play or hasn't played yet. It's going to help those teams too, really, because, I mean, Indiana's 6-0, and their schedule's going to get a little bit, their schedule's going to toughen, but they're not getting certain teams. Rutgers is not getting certain teams. I think Penn State, Ohio State, and Michigan are off Rutgers' schedule, if I'm correct. I don't have it in front of me. But I'm wondering how they're going to have to reevaluate scheduling in a couple of years. If that brings into play, you know, like you know, like I said, like in Indiana, going 10-2 and getting into the Big Ten title game, perhaps. I don't know if that's going to be feasible, but it's that to me is going to be an interesting byproduct of having the monster games as well in your prime windows.
Exactly. All right. What's your thought on this game this week? USC's coming off the tough loss to Minnesota. Do I think the replay guys in the end got it right? Yes, but their methodology was awful. You know, if you could tell me where the ball is.
Please.
You know, I mean, that's an entirely different subject, which maybe I'll touch on in a moment. But what's just your thought on USC and what they bring to the table for Lincoln Riley?
I was driving back from Penn State, so I was listening to that game, and I had the Minnesota radio crew on, and they were bamboozled. One of the decision, they sounded a little bit perplexed by PJ Fleck's decision to go for it, but two, they were, as you were saying, they were surprised at the methodology and their view of that play. Just they seemed to be absolutely certain that he was in even before the review. Mm-hmm. So if you're Lincoln Riley watching that and you feel like you're that close to getting it, kind of escaping, and then you get the interception in the end zone, then you feel like you're that close to escaping, you're on cue, how does that reframe and reset where you are? And coming back home, you know, sometimes that kind of thing is good. That kind of reset, yeah. You know, that kind of team reset can make them edgy. And Penn State walks into something like that, you know, a defense that gave up two late touchdowns, and now they have, you know, they have some soul searching to do on that angle this, you know, this week. And how do they respond to that? I think they're gonna, you know, that's a point scoring offense too. But with Penn State, which, you know, if they can get some of the pressure and the coverage, you know, I feel like the matchup is, I feel like there's a lot in going in Penn State's direction regarding the matchup. Now, all the other forces that are coming into it, like number of possessions and you know, just having to play out there and getting out there, you know, just being ready for that kind of, you know, regular season game as opposed to a bowl game. I think that all definitely factors into it. But I do, you know, initially I do kind of like the matchup as a lean, you know, leaning in Penn State's direction. It's offense, especially offense versus defense.
I want to ask you about the replay reviews for a moment. Virginia Tech Miami ends. It's called a touchdown. Then on review, they reverse it. Okay. Then I watch Minnesota USC. They mark him short of the goal line. They reverse it. I watched the quarterback for Cal scramble out. The Miami kid, and he's not trying to hurt him, but he does launch himself and hits him square in the helmet with his helmet. In each case, I thought you needed indisputable video evidence to overturn a call on the field. Now, do I think they got the Miami and the Minnesota calls in the end correct? Yes, but I can't see it. Okay, I'm watching them like, I can't see it. And the Miami thing's the almost obvious targeting thing in the world. Now, like, what am I missing? Am I missing something, Mark?
No, and I mean, I can extend that to baseball. Being a Yankees fan, again, I didn't see the game, but the Jazz Chisholm steal of second base that he ended up scoring, that was eventually the winning run, and it sure looked like he didn't get there. It did look like that there was a sliver of air between him and the bag. Right. So I'm ready to, you know, I'll acknowledge that one too as a New York Yankees fan. I don't know whether they're feeling like replay has to be some sort of court decision. Right. That if they're getting to the, they get to the indisputable part that there's some sort of appeal that's going to happen, that if they don't, that if they're wrong, then an appellate court comes into play. So that's where I think maybe some of these things are hedging. Potentially that way. I'm not, you know, I can't speak to the mind of a replay official.
Of course,
but
yeah.
It almost seems to me like that they're a judge ruling with an appellate court in mind when none is there. And ultimately that might, you know, that might impact the way they're going with the indisputable evidence concept that you're talking about.
Yeah, because I couldn't find it on any of those, but that's...
Right.
Like, okay. Mark, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for the time you gave us today and the great insight.
Yeah, outstanding. Appreciate it. Thanks, Steve.
Mark Wogenrich, always great to talk with him. This half hour brought to you by Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Great to have you with us today here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
There's something to be said about a sale with a handshake. A service technician who really knows what he's doing. They can explain it in English what the problem is. There's nothing better than having that friend you could trust in the area. That's Sunbury Motors, where you get selection, knowledgeable salespeople, and prices that fit your budget, and more important, that friend you can trust. Welcome to Sunbury Motors, Kia, Ford, and Hyundai. You could shop other dealers and compare prices, but at Sunbury Motors, you get their lowest price promise. They research the current used vehicle market and guarantee their used car prices are the lowest. If you find a lower price, Sunbury Motors will beat it. Three dealers all in one. See their full new and pre-owned inventory at sunburymotors.com. Pick out a vehicle you like and schedule your test drive online. Follow them on Facebook. Sunbury Motors Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.